Hello and welcome to Empowerment. I'm Kelly Whetstone. Thank you for joining me today. It is 10 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesday, August 26th, 2025. This is the last week of August. We're heading into Labor Day weekend, which, you know, has always been the unofficial beginning of fall, just like Memorial Day is the unofficial beginning of summer before the season actually changes next month. But really, I think it's kind of the second unofficial beginning of fall, the first being the start of school, which for a lot of kids was last week and even before that, here, at least here in Colorado and for my grandchildren in Illinois. And it's really interesting. You know, I love the seasons, and I love fall especially. I think fall really is my true favorite. But somewhere in August, and I know I've said this before, so sorry to be boring, something happens, a shift happens in August, and you just feel the shift into fall. And, you know, we've had really, really hot weather kind of throughout the summer, but especially at the beginning of this month and in July, like in the 90s, high 90s, even 100. So, and they just, and no rain, you know, no moisture to speak of. And up until even last week, they were in the 90s, I think, at the beginning of the week. But this week, temperatures have dropped 20 degrees from where they were, you know, less than 2 weeks ago. So change is definitely in the air. For the past couple days, 2-3 days, we've had little rainstorms at night, but it's moisture and it's cool. And it's, you know, the invitation for me to go back out in the yard and do some stuff. I mean, when it's 90 degrees, I have absolutely no interest in doing anything but watering, making sure everything stays watered. But to get out there and really pull weeds and stuff is not appealing to me when it's too hot. So now, you know, now here's a shift. You know, it's a gentler time. So anyway, it's just so lovely to see. It was, I think, 57 degrees this morning when Grace and I went for a walk about 6 a.m. and you can breathe, and it's just invigorating, I think. So it's really nice. Fall is in the air. It's on its way. It's unavoidable, and it is just my happy time. So anyway, enough about that. Just to let you know, this show is live today on 12radio.com and streaming on YouTube. If you'd like to join the chat, go to 12radio.com and click chat. And then you can click the YouTube link posted under my banner to get to the YouTube chat room. Feel free to comment or ask questions about the teaching segment, what I talk about, and I will answer them after the show. I don't do readings on the show, but if you would like a reading from me, you can find me every day on 12listen.com. Usually available mid to later morning, Pacific time into the evening. If you don't see me, if I'm busy, just schedule a call, put in a callback request. I'm notified immediately, and I will be back to you as soon as I possibly can. Also, just a reminder that we have reduced rates on calls and chats a few times a week on 12listen, typically Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. We also celebrate astrological events, holidays, and the 12th of each month. If you want to be notified of our specials, just go to 12listen.com and leave your email address at 12promotions. As always, I want to thank you for listening today, listening actually however and whenever you do. There's programming 24/7 on 12radio.com, and there are archives of all of the shows from all of the hosts in the on-demand section at 12radio.com. You can download them anytime you want. And, you know, 12radio is a way that we can support you. It's a great source of inspiration, information, and most of all, that support. And, you know, the thing about inspiration is up to us. You know, it typically does not come knocking at your door. It's up to us to keep our cork afloat, as Abraham would say. And 12radio, again, is another good source to do that. So I just want to say thanks to Serena for producing my show today. And we're going to quickly move into the teaching segment because I've got a lot to talk about today by listening to a song called Where the Soft Breezes Blow by David and Steve Gordon from the Celtic Lounge 3 CD and Sequoia Records. Enjoy it, and I'll be back right after. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that music. I just think it's lovely and a lovely segue into the teaching segment, out of announcements and hellos to what I'm here to do, which is share some wisdom with you that has been expansive to me, to say the least. What I always do. This is my job. This is what this show is about. It's about my learning, realizing, and sharing. That's it. That's what I'm here to do. And this is my platform to do it. So thank you for joining me on this beautiful Tuesday. So today I want to talk about acceptance, which is a far deeper subject than you might think. And I want to look at it from a few different angles and through the wisdom of a few different wise men, wise teachers. So, you know, as always, the invitation is, I invite you to float along with me. A lot of times when I talk about things, there's pondering involved. And I get to ponder out loud as I talk to you. And it's just great because it's just, you know, I get to expand as I talk about what I want to talk about. So I always invite you to float along with me. Take what resonates, leave what doesn't, but don't struggle with anything. Don't struggle. If something kind of bumps up against, you know, what you know, or you know, something in your consciousness, just let it go. You know, let it go. Because there's probably something in here that's going to be useful. That's what I think. Or else I wouldn't be talking about it. And you wouldn't be listening. So we have this agreement called empowerment for the next 50 minutes or so. And we're all part of the agreement. And what's interesting about agreements is that goes for anyone who is listening to this show on a replay or as a download. So we're all part of this agreement. And it's a spirit-to-spirit agreement. And spirit-to-spirit agreements are always for growth. Always for growth. And so that's just a cool thing to think about. So without you, I wouldn't be doing this. I wouldn't even have the thought or the opportunity to do it. It's a circle. Everything's a circle. So including my voice being acting up at the moment, I'm going to have a sip of tea. Sorry about that. So back to acceptance. I'm sure you're familiar with the saying, the only way past is through. And that's very true. Very, very true. But the way through begins with acceptance of the thing you're trying to get past. It has to. We have to be able to accept what currently is in our experience as it currently is in our experience. So first off, I want to give you a visualization exercise that I learned 20 years ago at the Institute at ICI. And this is a visualization exercise for expanding acceptance. Change can only happen after you accept things the way they are. It's a dichotomy. I don't want to be here, but I can only get past this if I can have it. Quote unquote, have it. So here's how it works. Imagine you're holding a large platter on your outstretched arm, and your arm is all the way outstretched. And one end of the platter is up against your chest, and the other end is at your fingers. So you really are, it takes up your whole arm. So the end that's up against your chest is what is, what's happening right now. The thing you want to change as it is in the present moment. At the other end is your desire, what you want instead of the thing that you want to change. So the goal is to, quote unquote, have both at the same time. As in, I can totally have my current job or car or being single, and I can totally have a new job that pays more, that lights me up, that I'm excited about, a new car that I know will be dependable and take care of me, a supportive and loving partner, whatever that is, whatever that desire is, you can totally have it, but at the same time, you can totally have where you are right now. And the more you can accept or have where you are right now, the distance between what you have and what you want becomes shorter and shorter. So what you're doing by having what is you are drawing to you that thing that you desire. And we can only have the thing that we want to manifest by becoming it, right? So if we're struggling with anything, we're eliminating the ability to totally occupy that thing that we want to have. So it's a really powerful exercise. Having what is means just that, having it, not complaining about it or judging it as not good enough, not at all. It just is. Or above all, not needing it to be different. Because when you need something to be different, it's just going to prove to you over and over that it's here, and it gets bigger and bigger. Because need is a repelling vibration. It is not attractive. Whatever you need, you keep just outside your grasp, because it just does that. It really is. It repels. It does not attract. Because those things, needing, complaining, or judging, make an enemy of what is, and you empower what you do not want. Having, quote unquote, having is detached neutrality. That's what it is. Right now, I can totally have what is, and I can totally have my desire. There's no clinging. There's no clinging to your desire. And what happens is that as you are havingness, so to speak, your havingness of what is expands, it expands because you become indifferent to it. And as I said, the distance between it and what you want shrinks as your desire moves closer to you and ultimately manifests. And it is a graceful and empowering exercise. You cannot move past anything you cannot accept because you are resisting what is. And that resistance will push back and prove to you over and over that what is not what you want. So this is a great exercise for empowerment, for just empowerment, and for you regaining and sustaining, so to speak, your seniority, certainty, and clarity over what is happening in your experience. So now, let's get into deeper waters. Our three wise men today are Alan Watts, Ram Dass, and Joseph Campbell. So I've been listening to, and I think I mentioned it on a prior show, to Joseph Campbell's Power of Myth. This is a series of television shows that he did with Bill Moyers on PBS. He did them, I think it was 1986, 87. Joseph Campbell died in 1987. So there were 2 years of them putting these shows together. And they're wonderful. And I remember watching them on Sunday mornings when they were first aired. And as I said, they're fantastic. And Joseph Campbell is an incredible teacher and an incredibly passionate man about what he talks about his bliss, which is myth. So as I said, I've been through all of them more than once, but the one I've been stuck on recently is the second episode, in which they talk about the story of creation in the Bible and creation stories from other cultures. And the really interesting thing is that they're all pretty much the same. They're all pretty much the same. Totally different cultures, totally different philosophies, but they're pretty much all the same, which just lets you know we're all the same, right? There is one truth, one being, one God, one source, and there is nothing and no one outside of that. There's not God and anyone or anything. There is just God, source, all that is. So they start with, in Genesis, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. The first chapter of Genesis goes into detail of how God created everything and then created man. The Aitareya Upanishad goes into the very same detail. The very same detail. The Upanishad creation story, Aitareya Upanishad, says, before the world was created, the self alone existed. Nothing whatever stirred. Then the self thought, let me create the world. He brought forth all the worlds out of himself. The self thought, how can this be without me? Joseph Campbell's translation of the creation Upanishad. In the beginning, there was only the great self, reflected in the form of a person. Reflecting, it found nothing but itself, and its first word was, this am I. He realized, meaning the great self realized, I indeed am this creation. I've poured it forth from myself. In that way, he became his creation. And verily, he who knows this becomes in this creation a creator. That makes my head want to blow off in a good way. Then Bill Moyers asked him about the fall of man in the Garden of Eden. And Campbell said, there are many myths in many cultures about the one forbidden thing that man cannot resist. It's a theme in many, many different myths. So he said he was pretty sure that God knew that man would eat the fruit from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. He said, man had to, because by doing so, he became the initiator of his own life. Life begins with that. Now, that stuck in my head for probably weeks. It just went over and over and over. By eating the forbidden fruit, he became the initiator of his own life. You know, Campbell went on to say, prior to eating the fruit, there was total and complete oneness. There was no other. And he said that man and women didn't know they were different from each other. There was just one, is God, and God walked in the garden with them. There was no time in paradise. There was no concept of time. There was no time in paradise. It just was. It just is. Actually, it still is. Didn't go anywhere. We just, you know, we left it. And by the way, God did not boot Adam and Eve out of the garden. They left the garden. They took themselves out of the garden. So anyway, back to there was no time in paradise. But when they ate the fruit, they became aware of the pairs of opposites, duality. And then man was in the field of time. And of course, you know, when God said, you know, he comes into the garden and they'd covered themselves. You know, they realized they were naked and they covered themselves. And he said, who told you you were naked? You know, and you know, the serpent did. Well, who gave you the fruit? And of course, man blamed woman for giving him the fruit, and the woman blamed the snake. And Campbell said an interesting thing. He said, in that blaming was the refusal to affirm life. He said, it's a childish attitude to say no to life and all its pain. He said, good and evil are merely temporal apparitions. The Hindus believe that all the universe is the manifestation of the divine, Brahman, and affirming that which you deplore affirms eternity. So everything, good, bad, if God is, God is. whatever our experience is, we're the ones that dictate good, bad, right, wrong, you know, because we are in that duality. And we, you know, through our, what I've been talking about for the past few weeks, through our filters, we have that judgment of this is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong. We assign everything the quality and the effect that it has on us. Period. I mean, the thing that's happening is just a thing that's happening. So, as he said, affirming that which you deplore affirms eternity. And eternity is not in the future. Eternity is here now. We are in it now. That reminds me of Joel Goldsmith. A wonderful book of Joel Goldsmith's is called A Parenthesis in Eternity. Eternity is a circle. It's a circle that eternally keeps going. And these lifetimes, these incarnations, are just a parenthesis in that eternity. And then we go right back into it in spirit. But right here, it is still occurring. It's not in the future. It is right here, right now. We are living in eternity, right here and now. And the experience, he says, the experience of eternity here and now is the function of life. And he said, if you realize that the horrors of the world are the foreground of a wonder, then you can come back to participate in it. That's the affirmation of the world. That is affirming the world, he said. And who are we to judge what's right or wrong? Man, I'm telling you, you can get it on Audible, you can listen to it on YouTube, I'm pretty sure. But it's the second episode 2 in The Power of Myth. So when Campbell said man had to eat the forbidden fruit because by doing so he became the initiator of his own life, it seems he was talking about the Yetzer Hara. And I've talked about that because that's a concept that it's the same thing. It's the same thing he was talking about. And I'm going to tell you why. The Yetzer Hara is the wayward inclination, which is considered an essential part of human nature in Judaism. Alan Watts called the Yetzer Hara the element of irreducible rascality that God put in every man. And that's, in Judaism, that's the lesson, that God put the Yetzer Hara in every man, that wayward inclination, because God created everything. He said Alan Watts said, the Hebrew believes that everything God created is good, including the Yetzer Hara. Because he said, without it, life would be boring. But if we can accept that, now that's really different than growing up in Western Christianity, which I did. I was raised Catholic, and then was born again as a teenager and went to a born again Christian high school. And you know, here's the idea that all the things that we beat ourselves up over is just part of who we are and part of the God self within us, and that there's no judgment or condemnation because of it. There isn't. We weren't born bad and have to earn our way to heaven. We weren't. It's just not possible, because that which lives us is God, is source, is life, is Brahman, the Tao. It's everything, is all that is. So how could we show up here anything less than perfect, really? And, you know, if we can accept that everything that's happened in our lives, from the families that we were born into to the choices we've made, were exactly what they were supposed to be, there were not mistakes. they weren't mistakes and they weren't wrong. They were life experiences that contributed to our infinite evolution. And we don't grow without adversity. We don't. But the thing is that we think that we need to get past adversity rather than just accepting it. You know, being in it. Okay, this is crap. You know, I mean, this is not really where I want to be. But you know what? I can have it. I can have it. Let's see what this feels like if I don't fight it. If I fight it, it's going to feel worse. But if we can just have it, we learn, we grow, and what we really learn is that we're powerful enough to just have it. If we were perfect and life was a skate in the park, we'd be bored out of our minds and we'd learn nothing. We need that wayward inclination to make life interesting, to further our evolution, and to realize that no matter what, we are no less than the infinite self that lives us. Ever. Ever. So we are self-complete. Nothing is missing, including free will, which is also, I think, aka the Yetzer Hara, or, you know, just that ability to, you know, to eat the forbidden fruit. Ram Dass in The Spiritual Pendulum, and I've taught a zillion classes or talked about it a million times on empowerment. The Spiritual Pendulum is the best video. I couldn't even guess how many times I've listened to it because it's a combination, compilation of Ram Dass and Alan Watts. And actually, that was my introduction to Alan Watts. Listening to Alan Watts for the first time was listening to The Spiritual Pendulum because I'd been listening to Ram Dass. So it's phenomenal. It's just phenomenal. But in it, Ram Dass was talking about, I can't remember what the section was called, like something to the effect of accepting life or being in life. And he talks about having a teacher called Emmanuel, which was a channeled being, a being channeled by Pat Rodegast. And he said that Emmanuel had an interesting teaching. Emmanuel said, "You are here because you chose to be here. This is a learning place. Each lifetime is a wonderful opportunity to expand your consciousness and to move ever closer to your oneness with God. This happens in very small stages. First oneness with yourself, then oneness with your human community, then oneness with God. It cannot be done in one blinding flash. It would be too incomprehensible, too confusing. So be patient. When we choose to come back, we construct an embryo to hold the areas of distortion that we need to work on. Then we choose our infinite environment to act as a catalyst to bring out these areas. So you were where you needed to be as a very small child. So accept the distortions in you, because when you accept them, you can transform them. That's what life's about. You are here to find these areas of imperfection, to understand them, to love them, and to educate them into reality, which is truth, light, love. If in the transitional period you find things in yourself that are not perfect, don't blame yourself. Celebrate. When Ram Dass asked Emmanuel, what work did he have to do? Emmanuel said, "Ram Dass, you're in a school. Why don't you try taking the curriculum? You're so busy trying to be holy, why don't you try being human?" And Ram Dass said, he said, "Well, what do you think about that? You know, I hadn't tried that." And it's funny. It's funny, his response. But he said he wanted to be perfect. And in his mind, being human was less than being perfect. So he decided to go out and be human. And he said, I apologize for my voice. He said, I knew that as long as I pushed anything in the universe away, I wasn't going to be free. I realized that the game is not in being high, but in being free. And being free includes the highs and the lows. Free included all and everything, not this is all. This is God, except that. You just can't get stuck in those places, he said. It's just not good enough. Emmanuel told him, you have to embrace darkness if you want to realize the light. And then he quoted Manly P. Hall, Ram Dass did, who wrote, he who knows not that the prince of darkness is but the other face of the king of light knows not me, says God. So all of this, you know, just, I guess, just realizing that nothing is wrong. I mean, we live, I think, okay, I'm just going to say this is a bold statement and it's kind of a broad statement, but I really think if we're on this path, the spiritual path, you know, to be the best people we can be, to be the best, to be kind, to be loving, to be, you know, love give and rest. Love, give, serve, rest. You know, I mean that. Or as the Buddha said, do good and be good. That's all. That's all we're here to do. Do good and be good. If we're really here to do that, then we're really hard on ourselves when we're not that. We really are. But the thing is we live in you know, cause and effect, duality, you know, the pairs of opposites. We don't know good if we don't know bad. We don't know light if we don't know dark. And the thing is if you want to call it good and bad, it's the same thing. Light and darkness is the same thing. It's just because you cannot have one without the other. So, okay, there are things that we wish we hadn't done or experienced or said, but we did. You know, we did. And there is no condemnation in God. There is no condemnation. We are never, ever condemned because we are learning by our own experience, from our own experience. You know, you do something and, you know, you're going along just great and then something happens and you might lose it for a minute and you have that feeling in your gut. Right? That feeling in your gut of like, oh, I wish I hadn't said that. Or, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. Well, okay. That's your instant karma right there, right? Karma is action. It's just action. And it's the result of that action. We reap what we sow in every moment, in thought, in word, in action, in experience. So when that kicks up and you get that ugh feeling, you just go back. You know, you go back, you get quiet for a moment, and you forgive yourself. You forgive yourself. And you surrender that. You know, I surrender that. And you don't judge it. It's like, I just, you know, I relinquish all power, control, and responsibility for everything to everything. And I go free. I cast the burden of this guilt or regret or whatever it is on the Christ within, the God self within, where it cannot exist. And I go free. You give it away. You accept that, okay, I had a moment that I'm not proud of. I said something I'm not proud of. But it's over. and it's dead, gone, and over, because in this moment, you're not even the same person who did that, even if it was 10 minutes ago. So what a wonderful thing. You know, what a wonderful thing. And to, you know, to not judge ourselves or condemn ourselves, but to realize it's just human. It's just human. And that's all. And move past it. And give yourself a not only forgiveness, but just a dose of love. Just a dose of love. Because you wouldn't do that to anybody else. You know, I think we're quicker to be kind and forgive and to not hold people in such strict, not have rules for other people that we have for ourselves. You know, the perception of what we want to be and how perfect we want to be and what we should or shouldn't do as spiritual people. Well, let it go. You wouldn't do that to anybody else. But again, that comes with, it's like, okay, Alice, I'm just going to let go of all that. And yay, I'm free forever. No, it doesn't work like that, because life keeps coming. And we occupy different stages of life and different states of consciousness all the time. We do, because life is a flow. It's just a flow. But in that flow is an ever-present now. And whatever is happening in the ever-present now, if we can accept it, then that acceptance contributes to our freedom. Because we're not fighting, we're not struggling. Everything we struggle with just creates its own stupid thing. You know, it meaning its own big distraction. And then we're caught in that. And if we're caught in that, we are not in the present moment. We're not in the experience of life. Life, being in the present moment, gives life to the present moment. I love that. Oh, which I'm going to share with you in just a minute. So the acceptance and freedom part, the freedom part of acceptance is huge. Huge. And I've been, you know, first I'm listening to Joseph Campbell. Well, I heard the Ram Dass thing I heard years ago, and that came into my head after I listened to Joseph Campbell. And then I found a new book on Audible by Alan Watts called The Meaning of Happiness, The Quest for Freedom of Spirit, of the Spirit in Modern Psychology and the Wisdom of the East. He wrote this book when he was, I think, like 24 years old, something like that. And man, it's a deep dive for sure, but it's just rich. It's absolutely rich. And again, talking about, you know, just freedom and acceptance. And he wrote, "The freedom of the spirit, which is known through total acceptance of life and of oneself, is the acceptance of the present moment. The freedom of the spirit, which is known through total acceptance of life and of oneself, is the acceptance of the present moment. Acceptance of the present moment now allows the moment to live, allows life to live as it is now, and allows the moment to set us free. Everyday experience is simply how you feel at this moment." He quotes Yetta Bhutan, who said, "Thus, to allow this moment of experience and all that it contains, the freedom to be what it is, to come in its own time and to go in its own time, is to allow the moment, which is what we are now, to set us free. To realize life as expressed in the moment has always been setting us free from the beginning, whereas we have chosen to ignore it and try to achieve freedom for ourselves. But trying to achieve enlightenment by our own power is an escape from the present moment where freedom truly lies. Buddhism teaches that enlightenment or nirvana cannot be attained because it already is. It is not in the future. This life and death world cannot be separated from it. So think about that. Think about that. He goes on, and he went on to say that, you know, it's like, okay, we decide we're going to accept everything that is. So in that, we decide we're going to start doing that. Is we're not doing it now, so we have something to overcome so that we can start doing that, right? So when he said, you know, trying to achieve enlightenment by our own power is an escape from the present moment. We want to be enlightened because we don't like this. This isn't good enough. Where we are in this moment isn't good enough. So we need to work. We need to meditate. We need to do whatever to achieve enlightenment. That's a fascinating thing to think about. That in and of itself is, you know, something to just ponder in meditation. You know, what's our motive? what's our motive? You know, our motive, just think about that for a second. That just came into my head. What's our motive? Our motive for being perfect, for being good is what? You know, is that we're out of humanhood, out of, we're an example. You know, what is it? I don't know. I'm kind of fumbling because I really am thinking out loud. But that's true. You know, to try and attain enlightenment by our own power, which we can't. Our own power, being human, we can't. Enlightenment is spiritual. Human is human. It is a desire to escape from where we are because we have decided that where we are isn't good enough. You know, it's crazy. It's crazy. And again, the rules that we hold ourselves to, that, you know, if and especially if you're on a spiritual path, and I'm saying this from my own truth, you know, we just treat ourselves terribly. We really do. We don't cut ourselves any slack. And it's just so silly and unnecessary. It really is unnecessary. Because, you know, I realized that, you know, to put other words to this, acceptance of the present moment, acceptance of whatever it is that is happening right here, right now, allows us to transcend it because we're not judging or fighting it. And that is freedom. You know, as Joel says, we're always our own liberators. But now bringing it into more where we are as humans, you know, meeting the demands of daily life comes with the human package. That's what we're here to do. At times, you know, the demands and the stress that accompany them can really be overwhelming. It just can. And so we can accept that. It's okay. It's okay. You know, when it starts to feel like everything's been dumped in your lap and you have to figure out how to deal with it, it's all up to you. So you're in your head struggling. Well, that's usually ego playing the martyr, you know, oh, woe is me. But sometimes when you're tired or when you just are in wherever you are, you fall down the rabbit hole. And that's just how it is. The way out of the rabbit hole is not by doing, but by trusting. Not running interference and trying to fix things, but by letting them be and letting them run their course, accepting them how they are, letting them be. And letting things be does not mean doing nothing. It means accepting them and not pushing or forcing, not pushing against them or trying to force something different. We want to make things happen. We just do. But when we push, we get pushed against. It's sufficient to do what we know to do. Always live our lives in the best way we can. Do our work in integrity. Have our relationships. Let others do the same. Love, give, and rest. No matter what we're faced with, everything we need to meet every situation is within the infinite self. The outer world is a dream. Reality is the God self. An acceptance of the present moment, just as it is, opens the door to freedom. Now, my favorite thing to talk about where acceptance is concerned is surrender. Surrender is the most powerful method I know for healing and for changing things on a dime. And I mean that sincerely, because it got me through a very difficult time in my life, and I've used it every day to be in the flow of life as it shows up. And actually, I learned it from Alan Watts and the Spiritual Pendulum. Three magic words. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to live this life. I don't know how to be what I need to be for my family, for my clients, for my work. I don't know as a human. I don't know. But I relinquish all power, control, and responsibility for everything to everything. Capital EVERYTHING. The infinite God mind, that which lives me. The governing, maintaining, sustaining, and discerning principle of my life. And I go free. I go free. That is the most powerful thing. And then when you surrender and you feel that weight fall off, I mean, I feel it. I don't know how to do this, but I give it to you. You know, you. I'm your vehicle. I'm your, you know, we don't expect our car to go out and know where we're going and take us there. No, no. Consciousness is what lives us. Consciousness. Our self, soul, being, and consciousness, life and mind, which is God. Turn it over. Relinquish all power, control, and responsibility for everything, to that God mind who wants to become more and more of itself in and through us. That's us getting out of the way and allowing that to happen. So that's my biggest and greatest tool for acceptance. Surrender. So I just want to end. I know we're in the last minute, but I want to end with a poem by Shankara that's very brief. It says, O Lord, dweller within, you are the light in the heart's lotus. Om is your very self. Om, holiest word, seed and source of the scriptures. Logic cannot discover you, Lord, but the yogis know you in meditation. In you are all God's faces, his forms and aspects. In you also we find the Guru. In every heart you are. And if but once only a man will open his mind to receive you, truly that man is free forever. Shankara. Thank you for joining me today. I'm Kelly Whetstone. You've been listening to Empowerment here on 1-2 Radio, where we're changing the way you listen to the world. Have a very blessed week, everyone. Please stay tuned for Katie Weaver. Bye-bye.